Well, welcome to the Bridget and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, will Mason Cox get off? Will James Hird ever coach again? Will he coach Essendon? Contrasting fortunes for the Eagles and Dockers and total confusion over umpiring.
That was out of bounds!
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, welcome to the Bridget and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Duff can't be with us today. Bridget Lacey from the West Australian, esteemed football writer. Welcome.
Thank you. It's always great to come off the bench, Quarters.
Oh,
I saw the sign that you held up saying, "Bridget, time for you to Duff, time for you to come off the ground, Bridget."
So what? So we had a weekend. What was your highlight of the weekend?
Oh, probably. I mean, it was a low light and a highlight at the same time. But the AFLW Grand Final, to see so many people there, and then when Erin Phillips did her knee. The ovation from both sets of supporters as she came off the ground, I found that incredibly moving. And such, the game wasn't close, but that will be remembered as a moment in time for the women's game. To have, you know, almost 54,000 people turn out was remarkable.
Well, let's start with the AFLWs. And Doc Clark, the coach, was pretty emotional too, wasn't he? He's clearly bought into that side.
Yeah, and they're clearly a very close group, but for so much to happen. I mean, just imagine that, you know, you lose two of your best players to a knee injury, but you still win a premiership. I mean, it's there would have been so many emotions going through, you know, for those guys.
Hobbling up to the podium. I still look fantastic, nearly 54,000. Well done, Adelaide. Brilliant. The AFLW is moving ahead. I still reckon they got the timeline wrong, though. I don't like it squeezed in there. I wanted a standalone game. I think that window before the AFL season start is the window for it. I think it deserves it now, and surely that proves it deserves its own standalone day or weekend.
Yeah, they've got to look at the season as a whole. We know there's more teams coming in next season, including West Coast, so they're going to maintain that conference system, I think, which was a debacle this season. There's no two ways about it, but I think all the players want a longer season as well. Because there's so little time for them to work their way into it, isn't there? And it was so cutthroat this season. So there's a lot to work around, timing included. Where do they fit it? Because I think there's also a little research to suggest that these months that they're playing in are actually a lot more chance of doing a knee in that period of time as well. So
is that right?
Yeah, I heard something about that on the weekend. So I think we see that in the men's game, don't we? We see them. They tend to do it more this time of year than they do perhaps later on.
Perhaps because it's early. Now, a lot of very eventful weekend. We saw the 666 kick in again. It was painful to watch some of the games. We'll get onto that in a minute. Bridget, I know you're laughing at me because I had an unenjoyable Sunday on the final 30 minutes of the Hawthorn Western Bulldogs game, that's for sure. We also saw situations where, you know, where the lack of ability for coaches to communicate came into play as well. Unable to get the message out to runners. You know, tactically, this game's moving in different directions now, I feel. But let's start off with the West Coast and GWS game. But firstly, Mason Cox. So he's going to the tribunal tonight. Does he get off?
I don't think he will, because the severity we understand in terms of a medical report, there is something there. I think everyone sort of felt it was quite soft. That was the feeling throughout the footy world, wasn't it? But we know that if there is any sort of a, you know, damage done, they come down hard on that when you've chosen to sort of bump, particularly off the ball as well. So I can't see the argument where they're able to get him off, even though I would be quite happy to see him free to play. You've got to have the argument when you go in there. That's the problem for them.
That is the problem. So it's intentional, low impact, high contact. The AFL will argue he took three steps. It was 35 metres off the ball. They'll also argue that the Grimes medical report suggests there's signs of concussion there. So all not looking good for Mason Cox. But the argument is that they'll go in there and argue it wasn't intentional. Surely they've had a bit of time to think about what's a $10,000 fine if you get it wrong. So, as they should, pretty important player. Should he get off or should he be suspended for the week given coming up against the Eagles this Saturday night at the MCG?
They should bring in, actually I've thought about this for a while, they should bring in a laws that sort of take into account your size. So I think Mason Cox, you know, he's clearly been punished for being a tall player. And I think we've seen Aaron Sandlands cop that a couple of times.
And Buddy Franklin as well. Both those players have paid the penalty for it. So their argument is that you need to take a duty of care, given that you're that tall. So it would be really interesting to see how that plays out tonight. Essendon Football Club, Woosha under the pump. And now the talk is, believe it or not, Bridget, James Hurd.
No.
Is it going to? Is it a possibility?
How much more could you do to ensure that you should not be put in charge of a football club again than Hurdy?
So Hurdy put his hand up over the weekend and suggested, look, I'll never say never. My argument, I would think it would be a stretch for him to coach senior, to be in a senior position again. I hope he's not lost to the game. I think he would still be good within the AFL system. So I think that's where he'll resurface. But the more pressure that is applied to John Worsfold, the more likely it is to happen.
And clearly there are still people at the club who would like to see him there, or supporters of the club, not necessarily within the club. But, oh, he might, honestly, James Hurd might say never, but the club should say,
should.
Never. Well, you know, that everything they went through, in that it can be easy to forget how bad it was for that club for that period of time. So, it's fanciful in my view.
So West Coast v GWS on Saturday night, 16-8-104 to 17-52. Really, it was a game where GWS, if they had clearly West Coast won that game with, I think they executed their kicking. They're clearly the best kicking side in the comp at the moment. And GWS, had they got that element right, they'd probably win by 3-4 goals.
Yeah, they played into West Coast hand. We've seen plenty of teams do this, you know, Jeremy McGovern and Tommy Brass and Brad Shepherd. I mean, they're such a good defensive unit down there. So they really performed admirably to sort of, you know, stem the tide early, because they were under serious pressure early. And then just the efficiency, you know, particularly going forward for West Coast. They took their opportunities, whereas GWS didn't. And that was really the difference in the end. A 52-point difference, mind you. That's how efficient they are.
It's surprising, really, when I look, and you looked up at the end, it was 52. Lockie Whitfield obviously likes kicking it to Jeremy McGovern as well.
Well, he's not the first, and he won't be the last. It's partly the way West Coast set up, partly the fact that the GWS forwards were not able to provide an aerial contest probably often enough. You saw when they moved Nick Haynes forward in the second half, he did a better job of that. So they probably, you know, missed a trick there, because I think last time they came to Perth, they put young Sam Taylor on Jeremy McGovern. He did a very good job. So I don't know why every team doesn't do that.
And the game of Hickey, just what the Eagles needed, really.
And just what Hickey needed, yeah. I think.
After a pretty poor round one.
Just after one game, there were already a lot of chatter about that, because we know West Coast like to play with two ruckmen, but they're not going to stick to that if those ruckmen don't fill their roles as they have done in the past couple of years. So Tom Hickey was under pressure and he performed 5 contested marks. It was pretty impressive.
So I think what I took from the weekend, Bridget, was there's probably, I mean, it's only round two. So, I think it takes at least 4 or 5 weeks for the season to settle. But clearly West Coast and Collingwood are going to be top four. Probably Geelong are the other side to emerge early with a new game, a new look about them, particularly in attack, but we'll get to that game. So, you know, a lot to like for West Coast. It's a big task this weekend going to the MCG to play Collingwood, grand final rematch. Let's not call it the replay. That's one of my great bugbears, that. It's a rematch, not a replay. But look, I think we give West Coast a big tick coming out the weekend, and also we should congratulate JK, Maston and Hearn for milestones.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, wasn't there? There was the unfurling of the flag with Rick the Rock coming down from the roof.
Spectacular.
It was pretty cool.
Scary.
And those 3 guys obviously celebrated well, and then you had the sort of race issues that were in the background all week for the club, and they handled
it. Was nice for the two teams to get together at the end. Yeah,
that was a lovely show of solidarity, I guess, in what had been you know, a confronting week in some ways.
Over to Metricon Stadium. Oh dear. So I think the talk last week was surely Freo, after that fantastic round one performance, a beautiful movement into attack, strangled the life out of the opposition coming out of defence. Just a different team and a different venue, weren't they? They really were. In the end, you know, it could have gone either way, but how, and the irony at the finish with, you know, Ryan probably should have got a 50-metre penalty. McCarthy probably should have got a free kick for being, for blocking. But then Sam Collins taking the mark that saves the match. Just irony everywhere.
Yeah, there's Sam Collins at Fremantle was very highly regarded. He dominated at Peel Thunder but wasn't loved by the coaching staff. Wasn't rated, really, it's probably fair to say, because he certainly performed very consistently. So good on him. He went back to Victoria, worked his butt off and got an opportunity at the Gold Coast. And you couldn't blame him for savouring that moment against a team that, that didn't want him, basically. But oh, it's hard to fathom. You can understand why Fremantle supporters are frustrated. How is that the same team from basically the same team? They lost Hayden Ballantyne, we know, but he wasn't certainly a star the previous week. And Jesse Hogan comes in. How can you put out two such different performances? And you could tell from the early moments that this was going to be a struggle. And they were lucky to be as close as they were, because Gold Coast should have probably won by about 10 goals.
And I'm picking them this week. They're back at home playing the Saints. And you will pick them this week. They'll be a different side again. Tell me, Lobb, Tabanet, McCarthy, Hogan, all the talk was about where they're going to, how they're going to fit into the same forward line. Well, they didn't. Hogan played generally as a midfielder, but they kicked, those four kicked 5 of 8 goals, but only 8 marks inside 50. So, you know, it's a, maybe we put it down to the day, the venue, the opposition as well. It's still a work in progress, that forward line.
And when they needed a big mark at the end of the game, guess what? It was Cam McCarthy against 3 Gold Coast Suns. So they clearly still got a lot to work on. I would have said, based on the first two rounds, Rory Lobb's probably the one who hasn't performed to the level they would have liked. But then again, he's structurally important because he's the backup ruckman as well. So that's his point of difference. Having said that, Matty Tabiner did that last year as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do at selection this week.
So among the better players for Freo, Fife and Hill. And Fife's got a bit of a clip last night from Paul Ruse saying he doesn't run enough the other way. And you could mount that argument, given Jack Martin got plenty of the footy at the weekend.
Yeah, second time in as many weeks he's copped that criticism. We know
Mick Mulhouse in the Sunday Times.
I would say it's probably not. He's probably not alone. We know Dustin Martin hasn't laid a tackle in 2 weeks of football. The great midfielders often aren't that great running the other way.
And Fife is a great midfielder, so he can probably get away with it more than most.
And he's the only, by the way, the only Fremantle player who got any coaches' votes on the weekend.
He did. So 5 votes to Nat Fife. Yeah.
So are we a bit harsh? Are we a bit quick to judge Nat Fife? I mean, we know, you know, I think, remembering back to his Brownlow speech, he paid tribute to Nick Subin, because part of Nick Subin's job was to block for Nat Fife and basically do a defensive job for Nat Fife. So are you prepared to sacrifice that for everything he does the other way?
Very good point. I think the truth's somewhere in the middle. I think for week one, you can get away with it because they look so offensively good, but it showed at the weekend, I think. One player I've got to mention is Sexton with his 4 goals and kicked 4-5, actually, I think, so could have kicked 6 or 7. Terrific player, leading the Coleman at this point of the year.
Yeah.
But he's been around, you look at his record, he's been around 7-8 years.
Yeah, and pretty, he's become a very important player for them, and good for them, he actually re-signed as well last week. So, he's one of those guys who's just an innate goal kicker, seems to know where to put himself. And I still remember Hutto's call, I think it was a game against West Coast over here, and he kicked a goal and he said, "Let's talk about Sexton." And he'd been hot, he'd clearly been waiting to use that one for a while.
The other part of Sunday, which was unenjoyable, I'll get onto it now, is the Western Bulldogs' victory over Hawthorn. Now, I'll start from the outset, Bridget. I'll get it on. They deserve to win, the Western Bulldogs. When you have 22-5 inside 50s in the second quarter, which the Western Bulldogs did, they just wasted opportunities, really, to put some scoreboard pressure on. Hawthorn trailed by 4 points. It was amazing that they were only trailed by 4 points and then established a bit of a lead. Then, obviously, lost a couple of key players, Burgoyne and Shield, and let's call it 3 midfielders, really, because I think Scully was short of a gallop. And, you know, sitting there with watching it with my two boys, and I think we're 24 points up, and I said, sorry, boys, this is all over. It just looked that way. And it's a classic case of when you are down in your rotations and another side's got a run on, you can't put numbers behind the ball. This time last year, they would have won that game, Hawthorn. Credit to the Western Bulldogs. They kept coming. And it was, you know, if you take your Hawthorn hat off, it's great. It's good for footy, that sort of a result, because it means now, with the coach a little bit impotent. I think Chris Scott used the term last week. He said we're naked and impotent to a certain degree, because you can't get the message to your runner with the new rules relating to runners. And you can't put numbers behind the footy after resets. So, and that was 9 consecutive goals the Dogs at the weekend. So it was clearly a case of they were just overrun and there's not much they could do about it. And there's going to be more of it.
Get it off your chest.
I have.
Quarters. No, you've got more to say.
Look, I never use umpiring.
But I'm just about to.
Well, no, it was just one of the worst displays I've seen. I thought the O'Meara one was soft. I thought the Sicily free kick was soft. Now, the Sicily free kick was soft, but then let's just say language I'm unable to repeat here. He's given the umpire a clip after the free kick and deserved everything he caught from that point onwards. James just needs to, you know, he's a hothead and everyone knows it. He needs to, you know, watch his mouth a bit more. But look, it wasn't a great display. I think it was if you look at the Sicily free kick, I think if you look at the Scott Lysett free kick, which was disgraceful, that was the worst decision over the weekend. There's clearly an overcorrection from week one, where there were some punches thrown and the penalties were seen as lenient. There was an overcorrection this weekend. I think there was an overcorrection towards Paddy Ryder after Ryder's tactics with Gawn in week one. And I just think it's a case, you know, I actually feel for the umpires. They must be really foggy running around out there not knowing what the hell the interpretations are going to be in week three now, because they've changed diametrically week one to week two, you know. And that Hawthorn game is a classic case of it. And you know, it was just one of those days. I guess you look at it and you say, this year or this point going forward, when you're 30 points up and it's three-quarter time, don't go and make yourself a cup of tea, because this game may not be over.
Yeah. I
feel better, by the way.
Do you think the match review panel has contributed to all of this?
Because, I think so.
Because we know that they didn't punish guys who punched, as they said they were going to crack down on it. They didn't punish guys in the round. It felt like the umpires were trying to make up for that on the weekend.
They were.
Yeah.
Clearly. So, anyway, that was
And it's cost Hawthorn 4 points.
Well, I think Hawthorn probably cost themselves four. I like the way Alistair Clarkson handled it, because he didn't give them an out. He didn't say, you know, there were some bad decisions, but he just said, when you're 22-5 inside 50s in second quarter, you don't deserve to win. So good. That was well coached, I thought. But well done, the Doggies. It's a good start to the year for them, and they're looking really good. I think Shacky is finally living up to his promise. 4 goals. Maybe 2 of them were a bit soft, but he still kicked 4, and is the difference. So well done. And I think Bontempelli, Dixon, even Gower is starting to stand up, so as well as the usual suspects, Hunter and Coe. So lot to like about the Doggies' start to the year. But my favourite team so far this year is the boys up there at the Gabba, and aren't they exciting to watch?
Lockie Neal's boys. Lockie Neal would be leading the Brownlow medal,
have to be
at this point.
43, just a tidy 43 at the weekend.
He was very good on the weekend. Clean hands. They're fun to watch, the Lions. Lincoln, but clearly the recruits they brought in, they're having an impact, aren't they? Lincoln McCarthy, Lockie Neal, Jared Lyons. Charlie Cameron, who missed, of course, a lot of last season.
Almost the whole second half, yeah.
He came in, of course, last year, but he's like a new recruit as well. He's been phenomenal for them. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be travelling up to the Gabba to play the Lions at any stage. And I think that game against North Melbourne the other day is one they would have lost last season, but they found something.
Yeah, very good point. And the development as well of players such as McCluggage now, who's, you know, he's an early rounder and he's clearly a class act. And the big O, Oscar big McInerney, all 205 centimetres of him. They're, you know, with Hipwood and McInerney up there in that forward line, the way they're pumping the ball in, they're a really formidable unit now, Brisbane. And with belief and unity, you can see the unity. I bet you Essendon would like to just plug a cord into Brisbane at the moment and grab some of that.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of these intangible things, isn't it? They seem to have a great spirit up there, and I think Chris Fagan's built a really nice culture in his short time there.
So North, on the other hand, as you said, you know, they're zip two to start the year. It was a better showing. We probably thought they were going to win, but as you said, probably the sort of game Brisbane lost last year. They only won five games last year.
Mm.
So it just shows the difference there, and I think they're well on track. I thought they'd be around 8th, 9th, but I reckon they're well on track to make the 8, even though it's only round 2. Geelong v Melbourne, and Melbourne had plenty of the footy, had plenty of inside 50 entries, but ended up getting done by 80 points. They look to me like a team that's 2 weeks from the end of their pre-season. They just don't look right.
It's bizarre, though, that clearly their systems failed them, and we know Geelong can do that to teams down there, but to have so much of the ball, to win clearances and inside 50 so significantly, how do you score so little?
Yeah, well, that's
concerning, I would have thought.
I think the difference between Geelong last year or the last couple of years and this year is the ball was popping into that inside 50 and then coming straight back out again. But I think the addition, they've revamped that forward structure. You've still got Hawkins there as the focal point, but you've got your Dalhouse is in there. I think he's 12, 13 tackles at the weekend. Constable's changed things up down there. Mia is another player down there.
Gary Rowan, of course.
Gary Rowan's joined them. So they're just a different looking side. And
that's why Daniel Menzel wasn't wanted at Geelong. 14. Because they felt that they lost something from a defensive point of view up forward.
Great game from Dangerfield, 37 possessions, 24 of them contested, and 14 separate goal kickers. Geelong. So it shows they're sharing it around. They're not reliant on one player and they're not reliant on one forward. So looking good for them. I think Melbourne will come good. I'm still big on them. But it might take a couple of weeks yet, though. I think by which stage you could be in a bit of trouble. So they're just going to really have to try and jag a game or two in the next couple of weeks to stay relevant, I reckon.
They're going to have to win ugly, I think, quarters.
Yeah, they are, which is, not something they're familiar with. Stephen May, groin injury. The talk is that has not turned up in the best shape. He's got his new contract with his new club and not turned up in the best of shape. I think his first training run for his club in the pre-season, he was well last to finish. So, he's not the flavour of the month at the moment there, I don't think.
That's disappointing, isn't it? Because, you know, basically wanting to leave the Gold Coast where he was a co-captain to play, I guess, in successful team. Well, how much do you want success? How badly do you want it? I guess we'll find out.
Port Adelaide defeated Carlton. Really entertaining game, this one. Carlton, again, showed a bit of yelp, but I guess when it came to the crux of the game, they just weren't quite able to finish it off. Good news about Charlie Curnow. We feared the worst when he went down with that knee, but he'll be fine. He won't certainly be out for a few weeks, but he's going to be okay, which is good. Probably still left to too few. Good to see Wiedering find some form again. And obviously Cripps is holding that team up at the moment. But look, the green shoots are still there. They're just not able to get the job done over four quarters at the moment. I don't think their supporters would be happy as long as they're heading in the right direction. But Port Adelaide, 2-0. Plenty to like about them. And Scotty Lysett, BOG, and daylight second.
Yeah, he's been a good pickup, a very astute pickup so far for Port Adelaide. We weren't sure. Clearly he was good for West Coast last year, but we weren't sure how good he was, I don't think, here in Perth, just because he was always in the shadow of Nick Natanui, and we know that he had a lot of injuries as well. But he looks like a man that has a lot of confidence and probably feeding a bit off Paddy Ryder as well. So
back home too.
Back home, yeah, good on him.
And one sad, the sad aspect of the game, Jack Watts had a really good start in round one and was buzzing along in round two. And I think he did a triple injury. He's done the syndesmosis, he's done the ankle was dislocated, and he's done some medial damage as well. So sad to see that happen. But the good news is, I guess, if you can get it, it's not an ACL. And he has been operated on already, and there's even talk of him perhaps coming back at the tail end of the year. So all the best to him. It was pretty sad to see. St Kilda defeated Essendon at Marvel Stadium. And incredibly disappointing first quarter from Essendon. And we saw comedy of errors, players kicking the ball into their teammates' backs. I think Curley caught one in the back of their head at one point. And you have two players running off the interchange at the same time, and while the footy just dribbles past them, it just made no sense at all. It just seems like there's a lack of spirit there, Bridget.
Yeah, they've been really lethargic the first 2 weeks. Horrible the week before against GWS, and you thought, well, they'll respond. There was no response.
See Woosher in the pre-game. He was interviewed and he said, I don't have to rev them. The boys will be responding. I can feel it. I can see it. And yet they came out and dished that up for 30 minutes. It's real worrying at the moment.
It's worrying. It's one thing to have the first up performance. It's another thing to be seemingly unable to respond. It's not as if the players would be in there not wanting to play well. There's clearly deeper issues there at the moment.
Hard to know what to make of St Kilda at the moment. Gold Coast have been up and about. Like, they'll give great. They'll be really competitive early, and then I expect them to drop away, being a relatively young and inexperienced group. And they did nothing wrong round one. But, I mean, St Kilda just got over the line, and they played against an Essendon side that seems devoid of spirit at the moment. The good signs there, I guess, are, you know, Bruce looks as good as he has for a couple of seasons and looks like he's settled. But Gresham seems to, so far, have taken that next step. We've all been waiting for it to happen. He seems to be sort of careering towards that elite bracket of midfielder now.
Yeah, I think St Kilda will find out more about them in the next couple. I think Fremantle will beat them over here this weekend. But
if they don't, they're 3-0.
Yes.
And all of a sudden that weight on Alan and Richardson's shoulders are lifted.
Yeah, and imagine if they were 0-2 right now, the pressure on him. He's sitting over in Melbourne right now going, well, this is all right.
He is too.
You know, the Bombers and Melbourne are attracting most of the criticism. So for now, I think what Saints supporters would be happy with is that they've been, you know, clearly up for the fight. And that's what you can hope for as a supporter most of the time.
Adelaide, a good victory over Sydney at the SCG. A nice response from the Crows after a pretty ordinary round one. Sydney, they look slow. Agree?
Yeah. I was a little concerned about that. I think every year we felt like Sydney might drop off and drop out of finals, but they tend to prove you wrong. They've got some really good kids.
Well, Mills and Heaney aren't kids, but they need to go in the midfield and they need to go in there now.
Yeah.
I mean, Kennedy, I think, got 10 votes from the umpires, from the coaches at the weekend. Mm. He can't do it every week. Mills and Heaney need to be in that midfield.
Yeah, I think they've put Zach Jones in. That's probably been a good move. But they probably do need that generational change now at Sydney. But Buddy still turns it on,
doesn't he? He does. Well, he kicks his 3 or 4 every week. I mean, he's just an absolute jet. A nice drill from Seedsman, too, at quarter time. Did you see that one?
Yeah, a bit more of that. We love it.
The long bombs at court. Well, wouldn't you too? Siren's gone. Have a crack from 60 and through it went. It was great to watch. Collingwood on the, just going back to the first game of the round, Collingwood and Richmond, and just one of those nights for Richmond, I guess. It's been one of those periods, the first fortnight. Rewalt, first it was Rance, now Rewalt. Now he's out for a month. He's saying he'll be back a little sooner. I'm not sure if Richmond will allow that. But you know, Richmond, just a few worrying signs early for them.
Yeah, I think we've acknowledged they had a lot of luck and good management probably over the last couple of years. And they had everything that they probably didn't want to go wrong in the first few rounds has gone wrong.
Apart from Lynch. Now, he's hardly touched the footy, really. And he's kicked three the first week.
Three and three, yeah.
So he's only going to get better.
Well, and that was the thing about getting him in, wasn't it? Because you would have said losing Rewalt was, you know, a disaster, but at least now they have Lynch in there as well, so it's not so bad for them.
And Collingwood, I mean, you mentioned Lachie Neale before. De Goey started the year in reasonable fashion, hasn't he, for the Pies?
He's one of those guys, isn't he, De Goey? He's so exciting to watch, so explosive.
Pretty fair forward line. It's a pretty fair midfield. It's a pretty fair defence too. They're clearly the team to beat, I reckon.
Well, they're 1-1. Let's not forget that. Geelong beat them.
It was a good performance. And the thing is, Geelong, we want to see how they go down the road in Adelaide this week.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think we're still finding out about all the teams. But you look at the Collingwood list and you go, wow. And what they've added this year from last year, and it's impressive. But paper is paper, isn't it? So I'm excited about Saturday night.
Well, thanks for your time. And we hope – how many tips you get the last weekend?
I think I got 5.
Yeah, I got 5. I sort of I was fearful, but somehow I jagged five. So I'll tell you what, this weekend's not going to be easy either. It's going to be a really tough weekend. So good luck with your tipping this weekend. Thanks for stepping in. Always a pleasure to have your company on the podcast.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.